I've certainly seen a lot of elements of the hand in a lot of the projects that I've selected, and it's something that I've really enjoyed being close to. But beyond that, you know, who in LA, who in New York, who in San Francisco do I know that might know someone in Oregon that I should be looking to? So patching that all together, I visited over 60, 70 studios and reviewed over 300 submissions that were sent to Disjecta to be considered by me. So, you know, I didn't reach everyone, but I feel really good about the ground that I did cover and the studios that I did visit.
So people are sending in slides to Disjecta.
It's digital now.
Well, when we reimagined the biennial, yes, we did away with slides. But
I mean, slides like, you know, PowerPoint type.
Absolutely.
Slides.
We put a call out every year.
Yeah.
And the process, as Amanda said, is it's an open call to Oregon residents. And then there's also a second component, which is of the curator's own volition to reach out into the community and see what else she is able to find or he is able to find in the artistic production that's happening.
Mm-hmm. So are you like the first line of defense and then you pass things on to Amanda, or is it
no shared? In fact, she has no defense. I mean, she literally reviewed over 300 submissions that came in addition to the studio visits that she was doing in the community. So it is this project is very, very much shaped by the curator's vision, and that's something that we, when we took the biennial on, felt was very, very important. And so for the first three biennials, of course, it has been a different guest curator each time. And that perspective, the perspective of each of those art professionals and how they shape the exhibition is a really unique approach, and I think gets at the heart of how art is being produced and what's important and relevant here and now. And really that's what the biennial is all about.
Mm-hmm. And is it about finding people whose names you've never heard of, you, Brian, you know, as a local, or is it about finding people who've been bubbling up and giving them a showcase?
Well, you'd be hard pressed to hide from me. I pretty much know your name. If you're out there working in Portland. But absolutely, I think that Amanda has pulled in work from a wide range of artists that she can talk about, both from a generational standpoint and also from the type of work that she selected. So
the this Saturday, right, the 8th of March is the first day. There are four galleries, and then there are some other spaces, public spaces being used. So just tell us about Disjecta. What's happening there? It's 6 o'clock this Saturday. Is that just a party, or is it a?
It is.
Event?
It's the grand opening celebration of the biennial.
Mm-hmm. Six of the artists will be staged at that venue. So the remainder will be placed at three other venues throughout Portland.
So the weekend is essentially two openings on Saturday, two openings on Sunday. All the venues will then be open. And what is also a very, I think, special component this year is the public art that Amanda has brought to the biennial. And those projects are actually out there right now and ready to view.
Live, just down the street from you, is a billboard. I did a series of three artist billboards, Ralph Pouquet, Modu Dieng, and Devin Van Houten Maldonado, and Richard Thompson, and they're all kind of on this end of town. There's one on Burnside, I think, in 10th. It's just up the street
East
from you.
East Burnside.
Mm-hmm. And they each kind of address an idea or an aspect of the notion of landscape. Richard Thompson addresses like the actual physical landscape. He's been painting Oregon for over 30 years. He's third generation Oregonian. He's just returned to the farm that he was brought up on, that his grandfather began, you know, so many years ago. So there's a real connection to the landscape for him in that way. I was also thinking a lot about the social demographics, those kinds of ideas of landscape. So that's represented in another one of the billboards. And
what are Modu and Devin doing? They've been on the show.
I know. They've been working within the space of the barbershop and kind of thinking about how that is a communal space, what kind of community gathers there, and pulling that into the biennial context. I think it's, for me, again, part of the research and the interest was what shapes the landscape here, what shapes the community, and kind of looking to see, you know, who's in Portland. So a lot of that also meaning like a diversity, kind of sense of diversity here. I think that there's a long history, as I mentioned, in the craft sense, you know, Native American crafting, just all kinds of things that are specific to the Pacific Northwest, but that's a more antiquated kind of way of looking at it. I want to know contemporarily who's shaping the community here and making the work.
So with the billboards, did the people come up with a sketch or a finished piece and you translated it to billboard
exactly
size?
So we worked with Clear Channel, and the process is something that I'm very familiar with. We do it at LAX Art quite a bit, so that's kind of where I got my training on that, and I wanted to see how the billboards would function in the context of Portland. You guys do drive here as well, though you might resist the idea. And
billboards are also beautiful for bikers.
They are. Yes. That's a good point. Yeah, I guess they have a more extended view of the billboard that way. But ironically, or maybe not so, all of those artists are painters by trade. So they created the work, and then those were scanned and sent digitally to Clear Channel and then translated to a vinyl billboard, which is what you will see when you drive or bike by.
And they'll be up for a couple of months?
They'll be up for the duration of the biennial, which ends on April 27th.
Can you tell what they are? Does it say, you know, Disjecta or biennial or anything?
That was really important. There's no branding on it. It's just the work. So I don't know what your experience might be, but hopefully my intention was to have the commuter, the passerby, encounter art in an unexpected way in a place that they might not usually.
So who else is Disjecta?
Jessica Jackson Hutchins. Modu and Devin will also be in that space. Evan Lalonde, D.E. May, Kelly Rauer, and Blair Saxon Hill.
Just say a little bit about Kelly Rouse stuff. What's she doing?
I'm really excited. To kind of pan out a little bit, the platform that the biennial has created is really, I wanted it to be an opportunity to commission new work by the artists who are included, or to provide a larger context for them to make what they normally do, to really kind of step it up and be able to present it in a more formal way. Pardon me. And so Kelly's work continues in a theme. She's always invested in movement, the motions of the body, and kind of breaking those down into something that's not exactly, it's not pretty. It's not maybe what you might expect out of a balletic performance, but she's really getting down to how the body functions over time through repetitive motion. So she's presenting about a three-channel work that will take up the flex space at Disjecta. So it's quite a sizable installation, and I'm really excited. It will engage the viewer, I think, in ways that maybe she hasn't been able to until this point in terms of the space that she's been given in other exhibitions.
Is this video and performance, or just
It's video, and Kelly will actually close the exhibition with a performance in that space.
Right.
Which I'm really excited about.
Right. Another name I recognized there was Blair Saxon Hill.
Yeah, Blair's been having a great year. I would describe Blair, without giving away too much, her installation will be, it will touch on assemblage, which is always ever present in the work, but it'll also touch on the theatrical. It's going to be pretty impressive. She's really building out her space and creating dimension and using that gorgeous building that we have available to us, so. Come see.
Okay. You're not giving away much at all.
I can't. I want you all to come out to see
it. Is it a surprise?
I think it's important that you come to see the work and encounter it and make a decision for yourself. I think it's difficult to talk about the thing without experiencing the thing. So that's why I'm being guarded about it, I guess.
So the second of the four venues is known as the best art gallery in Portland. Who's going to be there, Brian?
Well, that project is Personal Libraries Library project by Abra Onkliff. And I think it turned out that that was a great space for her project specifically. She's converted that into, I think, an ideal library environment for the project that she does. And people will be able to drop in there and get their own personal libraries assigned to them.
Mm-hmm. So she was, Amanda, she was building libraries based on what, bibliographies?
Yeah, a lot of research bibliographies. She's repiecing the libraries of, you know, Robert Smithson, for example, Borges, great thinkers that she's had a vested interest, I think, in her own ways. So by subscribing to a membership, which is really quite a small amount, you're able to help Abra rebuild these libraries so that you can share the resources more largely with other people. So the idea is that in this space, people can come in off the street within the hours given and just peruse. I mean, they can see the letterpress, the beautiful printed ephemera that Abra's made over time since the library was started, I think over in 2006. So you have a sense of her production, but also, you know, what was Borges reading? What was Smithson reading? What are you interested in experiencing in your time in the library?
Do these actual paper books on shelves?
They are gorgeous.
And you can touch
objects.
Them.
I know.
Can you take them home?
No. Yes, you can. It functions just as a library might. There's a catalog card system, and Abra tracks everything, and it's meant to be shared.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Radio, Portland. I'm Joseph Gallivan, and my guests this week are Amanda Hunt and Brian Sereth. Amanda is the curator of Portland 2014, a biennial of contemporary art, and Brian is the director of Disjecta Contemporary Art, which is one of the forces behind the biennial. Amanda, you brought in some music because you listen to music when you're curating. So tell us what it is.
It's Led Zeppelin, When the Levee Breaks. There's some serious drum work in it. It's an anthem. It's a good way to get started in the morning before I head into the gallery and have a full day of installation. So.
Was When the Levee Breaks by Led Zeppelin. Tell me again why you like that.
No, it also rains quite a bit here, doesn't it? Yeah. I love Led Zeppelin. It's always good.
How did you come across Led Zeppelin?
I remember I was on the Brooklyn Queens Expressway. I think I was like 10 or 11 years old, and it came on the radio, and I looked at my dad and I said, "What is this?" And I hated it, and then I loved it. Very quick sea change, so they're always in rotation.
Is the job, you do the same job in LA, right?
Correct.
You're curating, you do kind of what Brian does here, is that right?
Well, Brian's a director, so he's got a different role.
I don't get to touch art.
We don't encourage directors to touch the art. It's a different relationship to the art. I know that Brian has an appreciation for it, certainly, and is invested in the projects, but the curator shapes the exhibition. Mm-hmm. It's really about the discussion between the curator and the artist and presenting the best work and contextualizing the work and giving language to what the process and what the concepts are for the work.
But the job is sort of half in a cubicle and half like schmoozing?
I've never worked in a cubicle, so
okay,
that would be
IKEA
misleading.
Desk.
Some kind of haphazard makeshift situation. But yeah, there's some grunt work. You play the role of the registrar, the cheerleader, the handholder. I mean, it's a very rich experience. For me, it's about a collaboration. So that's the takeaway at the end of the day for me.
And do you get to, you know, enjoy the sort of great art places of Los Angeles?
Absolutely. You know? I mean, part of the work is seeing the work. I have to be looking at art all the time. I mean, that's part of my own interest, but also to kind of keep abreast of what's happening, what kinds of work is developing where, you have to be seeing it. So I think that kind of goes back to me being reticent to share details about the work. You have to see it. So that's something I really do subscribe to.
The other two kind of conventional spaces are White Box and Up 4. So we've had Theo from Up 4 in here before, and he's on the board at Disjecta, correct?
In fact, he is the board president.
Okay, that sounds important.
It is.
He gave his gallery over for March.
In fact, yes, and we actually used that very space in the previous biennial, and so we've become quite attached to it.
And this is in the Pearl. So Disjecta, you know, the biennial is not normally in the Pearl. It's sort of.
Well, it has been. One of the things that we did that was distinct from previous biennials is moved it into the city at large. We felt that spreading it through many venues was a way both to engage the general Portland population and to give artists more room to execute their work. It's a lot more freedom for the artist. They have a lot more, I guess, design that they can put into their pieces. And from the first biennial in 2010, we have used multiple venues to produce the show.
How do you corral people? I mean, do you put on a bus or, you know, is there some way? You know, people are so lazy about visiting four spaces.
Well, we only do it every 2 years, so we're hoping that they can, you know, motivate. But yeah, we will. And you know, here's the thing that's interesting about this particular biennial. We obviously reached outside of the region to select Amanda or ask Amanda to curate this exhibition. And one of the reasons that we did that was because we would like to see the biennial platform expand its influence to showcase Oregon art in a way that draws comparisons to the national art scene and gives a reflection on what is being produced here and how it relates to the larger art market. Or not market, I shouldn't say that. We don't really work in the art market, but the larger art community. And bringing Amanda in and bringing her perspective, and you were just talking about Los Angeles, and it is certainly one of the art hubs of this country, if not the world. And her perspective from working there, bringing that to Portland, I think offers these artists a great critical eye that she selected. And hopefully we're able to generate a larger national audience for this particular exhibition, whether through reviews in art journals, art magazines, newspapers that are national.
Digital platform. We have a website for the biennial. It's very important to kind of touch on all of the networks that I have available in terms of my practice, but also that are available to the institution. So we really want to expand the idea of who's able to experience and encounter the biennial.
And so what Amanda has also done is put together a Saturday series, a way to keep the momentum of the biennial flourishing through the entire run of the show. So every Saturday will be a different event, you know, that obviously is focused on the work and the artists that are in the biennial. And so we invite you to come out. And as Amanda mentioned earlier, the website, which has all of this information, there's a lot going on, let's be honest. And so you know, you will need a resource to track it. Biennial.disjecta.org is where you will find it.
The first Saturday series is March 15th, correct. Is that correct? So that's called Monumental Gestures in the Public Sphere.
Yes.
And where is it?
It'll be hosted at PSU. Harold Fletcher will moderate the conversation. between Ralph Bouguet and Christopher Micklig and John Zerzan. I've mentioned that Ralph is one of the artists featured in the billboards, and Christopher and John, I'm not sure if you're familiar with John Zerzan, he's a pretty important anarchist thinker and writer who's based out of Eugene, as is Christopher, and they, yeah, shaped this wonderful project. It's called Kiosk, Kiosk, Kiosk. It's three different kiosks that are staged in three different locations in the city. Mm-hmm. And they incorporate text, quotes that John selected from great thinkers past, Auden being one of them. But there's also a broadside pamphlet that he and Christopher created that features a text written by John specifically for the context of these public sculptures and for the context of the biennial. So those are up now at Jameson Square. There's another one at Burnside.
It's in the North Park blocks on Burnside, and it is really adjacent to Publication Studio, which is one of the artists that has been selected for the biennial. And the last location is, there's a kiosk at Disjecta.
Mm-hmm. So the first event for the Saturday series on the 15th will be a conversation and a presentation on those works, but also what it means to present art in the public context.
Right, right. And some of the other ones are Networks on March 22nd, and there's a panel discussion on March 29th. What's that about?
That's a good one. And that's very exciting. And this is, again, I'll go back and reference this sort of building the influence of the biennial. Amanda reached out to Mary Beebe, who is quite influential in Portland's artistic history. She was the director of the Portland Center for the Visual Arts from 1972 until some point in the 80s. I don't recall off the top of my head, but she is largely connected to Oregon's history, and will be coming up along with Ann Elgood, who's a senior curator at the Hammer Museum in Los Angeles. So Amanda's influence, I guess, if you will, to pull those two into a panel discussion is very important.
I'm thrilled about it. We're going to be able to talk about Mary's long work and investment in the community here, the creative community here. Ann Elgood is a native Oregonian, so I'm wanting to bring her in. We worked together on another biennial in Los Angeles in 2012, so that's kind of how we know each other. But I'd be curious to hear from Ann, as a contemporary, a bit more, what her take is on what she's seeing in terms of the production here and all of our experiences as we've come to visit the Northwest and staged exhibitions, worked with the community, just a way to think more largely about it.
Mm-hmm.
From different perspectives.
And briefly, Amanda, I mean, what other kind of observations have you made, generalizations about Portland or Oregon art? I mean, beyond the craftiness, what's different about this place?
It's a connection to the hand and to the land. I couldn't have anticipated that really to be as true as it has been. Some of the projects are made from clay out of the artist's backyards. It's just a very different connection to production. I think I've become accustomed to a lot of practices that outsource production, whether it's, you know, metal fabrication,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
and the like. And I see far less of that here, at least in the projects that I've selected for the biennial, and that's something I'm thrilled about. You can really see the hand, and I've been able to watch that be shaped.
You've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Radio Portland. I'm Joseph Gallivan. My guests this week were Amanda Hunt and Brian Sereth. They were talking about Portland 2014, the biennial, which begins this Saturday and ends on April 27th. Thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you for having us. Andy Warhol looks a scream. Hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen. Can't tell them apart at all. Andy Warhol looks a scream. Hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen. Can't tell them apart at all.
KABU is sponsoring an evening on the future of schooling in Portland at the Clinton Street Theater on Thursday, March 13th. It starts at 6 p.m. with a panel discussion that addresses what's ahead for public schools after the recent fierce contract battle, the case against high-stakes testing in privatizing schools, why public schools produce higher test score performances than private schools, and how we can work together to create truly wonderful schools. Speakers include Gwen Sullivan, president of the Portland Teachers Union, also school board member Steve Buell, and folks from the High School Student Union and Oregon Save Our Schools, a parent group. After discussion, we will present the film The Inconvenient Truth About Waiting for Superman. It's a film that debunks the attack on public education and teachers' unions. It all happens on Thursday, March 13th at the Clinton Street Theater at 6 p.m.
You're listening to news headlines at noon for Tuesday, March 4th on KBOO News. The Portland African American Leadership Forum will co-host a second community visioning meeting tonight for the empty lot at the corner of Northeast Martin Luther King Boulevard and Alberta Street. The purpose of these meetings is to hold space for members of the public to talk about how they would like to see the property developed. Trader Joe's had planned to build a store at the site, but pulled out due to lack of community support. Tonight's meeting will take place at 6 p.m. at 311 North Ivy Street. The Affordable Care Act has the potential to reduce prison populations, and some are even calling it the biggest piece of prison reform legislation in recent history, according to a report in Newsweek. Although the Affordable Care Act does not refer to prison populations in its text, it will provide care for mental illness and addiction that may inadvertently reduce the number of people going to prison. By treating addiction and mental illness, there could be a reduction of crimes committed related to those conditions, reducing the epidemic of incarceration in this country. Climbing season begins on Mount Everest this week, and this year officials are cracking down on litter bugs. While the anti-littering rules are not new, they have not been enforced until now. Now, climbers will be required to return their trash to base camp or risk forfeiting a $4,000 deposit. You've been listening to news headlines on KBOO. I'm Kelly Sunrose. For more local, national, and global news, tune in weekdays at 5 p.m.
Este programa es patrocinado en parte por la Fundación de Miembros de KABU y Cover Oregon, un sitio en línea donde usted puede comprar un seguro de salud y aprender sobre la posibilidad de asistencia financiera. Más información disponible en coveroregon.com o 1-855-268-3767. This KABU program is made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from Cover Oregon, a place online where you can buy health insurance and learn about possible financial assistance. More information available at coveroregon.com or 1-855-268-3767.